Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio for the 4 o'clock hour here at WILK, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 83 degrees, 409 on this Wednesday, July 9th, 2025. Before I get into the next story that I have for you guys here today, listen, we're hearing a lot of things about the BBB, the Big Beautiful Bill. And I want to break down how it affects you or I, you know, your average middle-class everyday Pennsylvanian. So here's some things that the Big Beautiful Bill does as far as tax rates. No tax on overtime. For a single filer, that will be up to $12,500. And if you're filing jointly and you both make overtime, that's up to $25,000. So $25,000 will not be taxed on overtime. That's federal tax only. You'll still get your FICA taken out. You'll still get your Medicare, Social Security. State tax will still be brought out, but that's a nice chunk of change. No tax on tips up to $25,000. Again, if you're a tip worker, that's a beautiful thing. Now, the child tax credit has been expanded from $2,000 to originally $2,200. You got a $200 increase in the child tax credit, but there's an extra $500 on there the first year. So that's $2,700 for the child tax credit your first year, and then $2,200 after that. Car loan interest is now tax deductible, but there is a caveat. The final assembly of your vehicle must have been in the United States. So it needs to qualify. The final assembly of your vehicle needs to be in the U.S. And you can write off up to $10,000 in car loan interest. Standard deduction has increased to $31,500 from $29,200 for married filers. Again, a couple thousand dollars in your pocket for a standard deduction increase. And the SALT cap, making your state taxes deductible up to $40,000. Really not a huge thing for you or I. If you live in states like California, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, it's kind of more of a benefit for them. I'm not a big fan of the SALT cap deductions. Why should we be supplementing high-income states like New York, California, Connecticut, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey? But it still does help us out by writing off your state tax only. Like obviously not school tax or local tax. Your state tax will be deductible up to $40,000. So your average middle-class person, you're looking at about $12,000 to $15,000 more in your pocket. And again, the tax breaks from 2017 were made permanent. So everyone would have saw a tax increase if they were not made permanent or at least extended. So there's some of the stuff that they're not really publicizing on you. Child tax credit increases, no tax on tips up to $25,000, no tax on overtime, $12,500 for a single filer, $25,000 for joint filers. Standard deduction increase now to $31,500 from $29,200. So some positives in there. So let's talk about that for a little bit. So Gavin Newsom in California, remember when the Palisades fire happened? We talked about it. It was going on for 2 weeks or so. The entire communities devastated, leveled, gone. Some of these homes were from the 1930s and 1940s, generational, passed down to the children and grandchildren. Now, one of the things I brought up there is with these houses being rebuilt, and you had the mayor of Los Angeles and the governor, we're going to fast track. There's going to be no barriers for permits. We're going to get these homes rebuilt for people and get people back in their homes. That's our number one priority. They even promised the president, we're going to fast track this. And he put them on the spot. Well, basically, they lied. Those permits are not being fast tracked. Very few permits have been put out. But one of the things I brought up when this was happening was, even if you had insurance for replacement value, if you had a house that you bought in the 1930s and 1940s and your parents paid or your grandparents or you paid, you know, if you're in your 70s or 80s, $130,000, $150,000 for these homes. Well, these homes are now worth $800,000, $900,000, $1 million, $1.2 million rebuilt. Well, in California, your tax can only be what you paid for your house. So if you bought your house in 1950 for $150,000, you can only be taxed $150,000 on $150,000 for that house. It's not like here where your property taxes go up. There's no reassessment. There's an Act 1 in California, which means your property tax is tied to the sale price of your house. So what happens, though, is when these houses are rebuilt because of insurance and they're now market valued at anywhere from $800,000 to $1.2, $1.5 million. This is right on the beach. This is prime territory. They can't afford the taxes. So yes, their house would be rebuilt. Yes, they'd be able to sell it, but they would be forced to sell it. They could no longer live in their home. They would have to up their lives and move elsewhere, most likely out of California, because they just cannot buy property in California. Well, here's the second drop of that. Newsom unveils a $101 million program to build Palisades as a low-income housing area. Yep, we told you this was coming. 6 months after the devastating Palisades and Eaton fires, Governor Gavin Newsom unveiled $101 million funding Tuesday for a multifamily low-income housing development that will contribute, and here's a quote, contribute to more equitable and resilient Los Angeles. The priority is for geographic proximity to the fire perimeters of Eaton, Hughes, and Palisades fire. California state law and local Los Angeles ordinance requires fire destroyed rent protecting housing, which includes all apartments in the city be built before October 1978 be replaced with low income housing, because the affordability requirements use county level income data, not more local incomes definitions for low and very low income housing reflect much lower incomes than the norm than the affluent Palisades community. Thousands of families from Pacific Palisades to Altadena to Malibu are still displaced, and we owe it to them to help, Newsom said in a statement. The funding we're announced today, we accelerated. So here's the thing. A builder is not going to build a house that they're going to lose money on. So the government, in this case, the state and city of Los Angeles, will need to use taxpayer dollars to basically pay for low-income housing. Because a builder's not going to build a six-family apartment building that's going to cost him $4 million that he's only going to rent for $1,000 a month. Just not going to happen. It's bad business. You will not get anyone to build it. So if the government, in this case, the state and the city, says, well, we'll pay you a profit to build these houses, and then we're going to put it in. So what happens there? Okay, you build all this low-income housing. The state taxpayers, the other richer people in the city of Los Angeles and surrounding area, pay for this low-income housing, and then they rent it out as low-income housing. Well, what if you have a house a few blocks away that was not damaged, that survived the fire because you took all your precautions, you had sprinkler systems set in that spray you the roof of your house? We saw a few of them during the time of the fire. You're now surrounded by low-income housing. What happens to your property value? You could have bought your house 30, 40, 50 years ago, or you could have just had it built, spent $1.2 million on it, but now you have low-income housing surrounding you. What happens to your property? And again, so you're paying extra to build your supplementing the builders to build low-income housing because they're not going to do it without making a profit. And then the taxpayers are paying because their property values are going to come down. And the people whose house was destroyed, who only want their house back to build a house to where they can live like they did before the fire, well, you're just done. You have to sell. And because you can't rebuild your house because maybe you don't have the proper insurance, or they just want your property and they're going to take it through eminent domain, they're giving you pennies on the dollar of what your property would have been worth. You ever hear the saying that, you know, Democrats never let a tragedy go to waste? Well, here's a prime example of that. And we said that this was going to happen. They talked about it from the very start. This isn't about getting people back in their homes from those communities, rebuilding what they lost. No, it's moving them out and redeveloping it to the vision that they have. And I think if the vision of the mayor of Los Angeles or the governor of California has proven anything, it's a really bad vision. People are moving out in droves. But now they can't even move out with their nest egg because it's been taken from them. It's been burnt away and they can't replace it. Even if they could replace it and not afford it, but they could sell it, make a profit, move elsewhere and do pretty well. You sell a house, you know, if your house was $200,000 you bought 50 years ago, you rebuilt it, it's now worth $900,000, you sell it, make a little profit, move somewhere else. Move to Florida, move to Texas, move to Nevada. Keep a couple $100,000 in the bank, buy a nice house for $350,000, live pretty well. But the big picture comes in here. Nope, we're going to get $101 million of taxpayer funds, and we're going to build low-income housing at a loss because no one's making a profit on it. That's why we need to use tax dollars to do it. Here's the government on a nutshell. This isn't a government's job to do. It's just not. So we'll have to keep our eyes on that, but it doesn't look good for the people of Palisades. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio 425. So police are searching for a bank robber in Carbondale. Yep, go figure. Carbondale police are searching for a man accused of robbing First National Bank on Dundaff Street about 2:30 p.m. on Monday. The man walked into the bank, handed the teller a note that read bomb, and asked for money, according to police chief of the area. The teller handed over an undisclosed amount of money. The man, described as a white male, about 6 foot tall, 30 to 40 years old, left the bank and walked towards the river. Police saw him on surveillance footage and made still images of the footage available to the public. They're asking that anyone from information call the county dispatchers at 911. No one was hurt and there were no weapons involved in a robbery or displayed other than the note. There are some decent pictures of the individual. My guess is that someone's going to pick up this individual rather quickly, if not already. So it's brazen. You got to give you that. You got to give him that. But I'm not going to go into a lot of the details on it because obviously we want this individual caught. But you're obviously not dealing with the brightest group of criminals when you're dealing with something like this. And it's pretty serious charges. Thankfully, no weapons, but no one was displayed or no one was injured. But even handing a note, even just being the victim of a robbery as a bank teller. Listen, we all know the young men and women, guys and girls who work in our local banks here, especially our community banks in our small towns. And it shakes you. You know, even though there was no weapon displayed, thankfully they did the right thing. They're trained in their protocol. Excuse me, protocols when something like this happens. There's an act of desperation on a lot of people. And yeah, don't know if someone's bluffing or they're not bluffing. So it is it's good that this happened as smooth as it did, and it's good, even better, that they have pictures. And in today's society where surveillance cameras are pretty much everywhere, even in vehicles, you have to realize that someone somewhere is going to get a decent picture of you. And even though some of them are kind of grainy, sometimes they're published out there pretty grainy purposely to make you think that maybe we don't have a good look at you to begin with, and it kind of lets your guard down. And then all of a sudden, someone's knocking on your door because you've been identified, especially if there's a reward. Now, I don't see anything about a reward here, but a lot of times, especially for bank robberies, there is some type of reward. That's added, but like anything else, you know, use your caution. It's good that the photos have been made public. But brazen, you know, 2:30 in the afternoon on a Monday, downtown Carbondale, and you just walk into a bank and rob it. But you're really, truly taking a risk this day and age. I just saw that there was recently a road rage incident here in Taylor at a Sheetz where somebody displayed a gun to someone. This day and age, you really don't know who you're pulling a gun on. So I'd highly advise against it. I talk about road rage incidents all the time, and something that's never bothered me as far as traffic, driving, anything like that. My time in my car is my time to unwind, decompress, maybe make a phone call, take a phone call, listen to some music. Last thing I want to do is to get in it to what some knucklehead on the road about something that will mean absolutely nothing to me in 5 minutes. So I've always found road rage incidents amusing, to the fact where they're comical at most. How could you let someone that you will never see again make you so angry to where you'll potentially put your life at risk and others, do something that may cost you your life, take you away from your family? This day and age, I mean, I don't care if you get out of a car and it's just a simple fist fight. You hit somebody, they fall over, hit their head on the metal barrier, they die. Well, now you spend the rest of your life in prison. Why? For arguing with someone that wasn't going fast enough for you? But hopefully this bank robber is in custody on short order. It's 4:30 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice from Pennsylvania. Today we have three on this day for July 9th. I'm going to start off with Patrolman Elmer E. Miller, Jr., Luzerne Township Police Department, 1970. Patrolman Elmer Miller was killed when he was pushed down a flight of stairs by a deranged man who was high on drugs. The suspect was charged with involuntary manslaughter. Patrolman Miller had served with the Luzerne Township Police Department for 10 years. He was survived by his wife. Next, we have Chief of Police Charles Elmer McConaughey, Mount Union Borough Police Department. On this day in 1923, he succumbed to a gunshot wound sustained the previous day while he and two other officers attempted to arrest a man who had shot another citizen earlier in the afternoon. Chief, along with other borough officer and a Pennsylvania Railroad police officer, gone to the man's home near the corner of North Jefferson Street and Grant Street to arrest him. As they placed handcuffs on him, he suddenly pulled away, drew a .32 caliber revolver from his waistband and opened fire. Striking the chief and the other borough officer, the railroad police officer began struggling with him and was shot once in the arm before Chief McConaughey was able to prop himself up and fatally shoot the suspect. All three officers were taken to J.C. Blair Memorial Hospital, where the chief succumbed to his wounds the following day. And Constable Harry Foster Darby Bear, Pennsylvania State Constable, Westmoreland County, on this day in 1903, was shot and killed by a man he attempted to arrest on a warrant for dynamiting a building at the Jameson No. 1 mine in Luxor. He had gone to the suspect's home at the mine where the shooting occurred. The suspect was arrested a short time later. While in jail, the suspect confessed to the murder of 18 people, including Patrolman Timothy Devine and Charles Pennell, of the Chicago Police Department on August 12, 2001. He was convicted of Constable Bear's murder and hanged February 11, 1904. And those are our three from here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Someone did, the other day, earlier this week, someone asked if there was an update on the railroad that is being talked about, the passenger rail service from New York to Scranton. It looks like there was a meeting where there was some sort of update today. I don't think I'll have it for today, but we'll definitely have it for you tomorrow, it appears. But there is an update as far as it's progressing as usual. There's no big changes except the studies are being done and It's still moving in that direction, but I should have a more detailed version of that for you tomorrow. One of the other things that came out, and I posted on my social media, my Facebook earlier today, is in one of the Supreme Court decisions that came out where it was a 8-1 decision, where Justice Jackson was the only dissenter in the case, she was actually scolded in a way from liberal Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who had to remind her for some reason that the case before them was not about what Jackson thought it was in her dissent. And I posted that quote from Justice Sotomayor, who I'll give you the short version, where she tried to be nice and said that she agrees with Justice Jackson that the president cannot restructure federal agencies in a manner inconsistent with congressional mandates. Here, however, the relative executive order directs agencies to plan reorganizations and reductions in force consistent with the applicable law. So she said, the plans themselves are not before the court at this stage, and we have thus have no occasion to consider whether they can or will be carried out consistent with the constraints of law. So basically, liberal Justice Sonia Sotomayor told liberal Justice Jackson that what she was arguing about wasn't even before the court, which is kind of unheard of, but did raise the eyebrows of a lot of people who follow the Supreme Court. So interesting to put out there. It's 4:41 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather. And get welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we have been? Let's see what's on the agenda today for this Wednesday, July 9th, 2025. Let's see, 1868, the 14th Amendment is ratified. One of the most important amendments of the U.S. Constitution, the 14th Amendment was ratified on this day. It granted citizenship to all persons born or naturalized in the United States, which included former slaves. It also guaranteed equal protection under the law as a cornerstone of civil rights litigation to this day. 1868. 1850, President Zachary Taylor dies in office. President Taylor died suddenly after just 16 months in office, possibly from acute gastroenteritis. Millard Fillmore was sworn in as the 13th President of the United States the next day. 1971, the U.S. Senate votes to lower the voting age to 18. This set the stage for the 26th Amendment, which officially lowered the voting age from 21 to 18. Largely due to Vietnam War era activism, old enough to fight, old enough to vote. No doubt. World War II era, 1943. The Allied invasion of Sicily begins. Operation Husky. Though not fought in U.S. soil, this marked a major turning point for the Allies in World War II. American and British forces launched a large amphibious assault on the Italian island, beginning the campaign that would ultimately bring down Mussolini. 1982, Tron is released by Disney. The landmark in computer-generated imagery, CGI, Tron was released on this day. It became a cult classic. It helped pave the way for the digital effects, the dominant modern filmmaking. I was never a fan of Tron. Never liked it. I don't even think I saw the entire movie. I've seen pieces of it. And never, don't even get me into the remake of it. We also have some things on this day. 1776, the Declaration of Independence reaches New York City. A copy of the Declaration was read aloud and George Washington troops stationed here. The reaction was so passionate, patriots later tore down the statue of King George III. Let's see what else we have. Is that just a copy of that? Oh, think that's it. That's it for Today in History today. That's what we have for today. Let's see what else is. You have any questions or comments or get into it? 570-883-0098. We're going to see if there's any updates on anything here. And like I told you earlier, that tomorrow I'll probably have some updates on the Metropolitan Planning Organization on progress toward establishing rail service between Scranton and New York City. Larry Malasky, president of the Pennsylvania Regional Railroad Authority, updated members of the Lackawanna-Luzerne Metropolitan Planning Organization on progress. So I will have that tomorrow. McDade Park splash pad will remain closed for at least the rest of the week pending a pump repair project. Not for anything. Listen, I realize I just have an above-ground little pool, you know, 24-round, just family-style pool. But I managed three pools in one of the previous communities, all in ground, and we converted the children's pool into a splash pad, which I agree with. Splash pads are great for kids. Not to replace lap pools. And then when I was down in Virginia, I managed one of our pools that we had there, including major rehabilitation. And the companies that dealt with the pool, lifeguards and such like that. What is it with the area here? I mean, each private community in our vicinity, in the Poconos, I mean, I could think of numerous ones. From Arrowhead to Big Bass Lake to the Hideout. I mean, there's dozens of them that have pools as their major amenities and are able to maintain them and operate them efficiently. What is it for Eagle Lake has a great pool. What is it about our municipalities here, the city of Scranton and Lackawanna County, that has such issues with pools? And have these entities reached out to these private entities, these private communities that operate, manage, and maintain their pools successfully every summer for their membership? Now, I understand it's private gated communities. I understand that they have budgets just like cities and counties to operate them. But you know what? Their clientele, their homeowners would not tolerate their pool being out of service for the summer. Their amenity not being built or being delayed or has anyone demanded that people involved with the Scranton pools or the county pools and assets meet with these individuals, go on fact-finding tours to find out best practices and such like that? Because what is it that's so defunct when it comes to pools or water attractions here in this area? I just don't get it. And maybe it's because we had such great experts that rehabbed and worked on our pool. I mean, we did resurfacing to regrouting to entire redos, but you know, it was done in the off season, so it was ready for the season. And it was winterized properly and maintained properly. I don't get it. I understand pools are a pain, but wow, right? That's all I could say. It's 4:53 here at WILK. We'll be back. You're with the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. I'm seeing more and more news stories like that. What's with the rash of people leaving their small children in cars in the summertime? I mean, there was just another one where police had to break the window to let two toddlers out of the back seat, sobbing in 117-degree temperature in the car. I mean, can we all agree, regardless of your political stances or backgrounds or anything, anyone who leaves a toddler, a child, an infant, a pet in a car in the summertime should be punched in the face? And then we can deal with the real judicial issues after the fact. It's just, I've seen a rash of it over the past couple of days, and it's more children than it's been pets. Usually it's been pets, you know, to the point where they've had to change laws But I'm seeing just the past couple of days, multiple children being left in the car. One, because some woman had to get her cosmetic appointment. She left her toddler in the car in the summertime. Another woman ran into the mall, leaving her two children, two toddlers. Just incredible. What are they? Doesn't say their age, but they have to be, you know, under eight. Probably even younger than that. These kids are 4 or 5 years old. Just incredible. Just incredible. Well, consider this public service announcement. You could be blinded by your brew. And I'm not talking beer. Whether you're a latte lover, a mocha monster, an espresso elitist, people have strong preferences when it comes to coffee. But what if I told you your choice to Java wasn't simply a matter of taste? An eye-opening study published recently by the Journal of Food Science and Nutrition found that drinking instant coffee may dramatically increase your risk of age-related macular degeneration, AMD, leading cause of blindness. Researchers analyzed data from over 500,000 participants and discovered that instant coffee drinkers with certain genetic predispositions were 700% more likely to develop dry AMD, the more common and currently incurable form of the disease. The genetic overlap suggests that there may be shared biological pathways from metabolic mechanisms connecting the preference for instant coffee with the risk of developing AMD, says one of the doctors who researched for the Department of Ophthalmology. It provides new insight into AMD pathogens and offers potential direction of personalized prevention strategies and the gene-informed lifestyle intentions. Dry AMD affects the macula, a small region of the back of the retina responsible for central vision. As the damage progresses, people may experience blurry spots, difficulty reading, eventually a permanent loss of vision. While risk factors like age, genetics are beyond our control, lifestyle choices such as diet, exercise, smoking play a role. Researchers are now adding coffee preference to the list, specifically instant coffee. So if you're an instant coffee fan, and I know people who carry packets of instant coffee to on the go, just add it and stuff, maybe you want to steer away from it. Go back to the fresh brew, little drip coffee, maybe a little fresh espresso to keep you going. Because we need our eyesight, right? The only two we got. It's 5 o'clock here at WILK.